Pope Leo is blasting people who are suppressing free speech. He's coming out guns blazing in favor of freedom of expression and freedom of conscience. Just this morning, Pope Leo met with the diplomats of the Holy See, and he tells them that it's painful for him to see that freedom of speech and freedom of expression is rapidly shrinking in the West. He says, at the same time, a new Orwellian-style language is developing, which in an attempt to be increasingly inclusive, ends up excluding those who do not conform to the ideologies that are fueling it. And then he ties it into freedom of conscience. He says, another consequence of this is that the freedom of conscience, another fundamental human right, is increasingly questioned by states. Under the last administration, we saw this from the woke left, attempting to silence anybody who would criticize wokeism. Now, on the other hand, under this administration, we're starting to see people on the other end attempting to silence anybody who would criticize Israel. In fact, we now have people on national TV calling for restrictions to the First Amendment. Why? Because the First Amendment right could be used to criticize Israel. Take a look at this Jewish billionaire Israeli who wants to say, we as Americans need to stop using our First Amendment right. In fact, it needs to be suppressed in order to preserve it. Watch this.
Network Shlomo Kramer, also one of the founders of Checkpoint, another big cyber company. Shlomo, it's great to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. That's already happening. You're seeing the polarization in countries that allow for the First Amendment and protect it, which is great. And I know it's difficult to hear, but it's time to limit the First Amendment in order to protect it and quickly before it's too late.
What do you mean?
I mean that we need to control the platforms, all the social platforms. We need to stack rank the authenticity of every person that expresses themselves online and take control over what they are saying based on that ranking.
The government.
The government should control the social media. Yeah. They should do that.
So the government should suppress free speech in order to preserve it. How does that make sense? What he really meant was the government needs to suppress free speech in order to protect Israel. And did you catch the part where he says that they need to control the media?
We need to control the platforms.
Does he not realize how he's playing into very common stereotypes here? And for the record, I thought that Israelis already control the media. We're seeing from Netanyahu that he already told us he was going to go after X and he was going to get Elon on board.
And the other one? What's the other one? That's most important.
X.
X.
Yeah.
That's cool. Very good. And, you know, so we have to talk to Elon. He's not an enemy. He's a friend.
And shortly after he said that, the algorithm changed and people who were criticizing Israel, their voices were more silenced, including yours truly. And those who were in favor of Israel, they were inflated and they were promoted. Meta's very own Jordana Cutler said this very thing. And keep in mind, Meta owns Facebook and Instagram.
In addition to my work leading the Israel public policy team, I created a new role specifically focused on the Jewish diaspora. It is a privilege to represent Meta to Jewish communities worldwide. I am proud that Meta's commitment to addressing anti-Semitism on our platforms has remained steadfast, especially after October 7th. Our policies are industry-leading in protecting Jewish people and Israelis on our platforms. Our community standards include policies that prevent harassment, violence, and incitement, and include a robust framework to combat anti-Semitism. Our hateful conduct policy includes specific protections for Israelis and Jews. We banned Holocaust denial and distortion back in 2020. We changed industry thinking on this issue, designating denial as hate speech rather than misinformation. It wasn't just about facts, it was about protecting people from harmful conduct. We banned content with harmful stereotypes about Jews, such as the claim that Jews run the world or other major institutions. We updated our policies to recognize that the term Zionist can be used as a proxy for Jews and Israelis. We banned content claiming Zionists run the world or control the media. and we do not allow for dehumanizing comparisons of Zionists.
Now, did you catch that? A Zionist is straight up telling us that they're controlling the media to ban anybody from thinking that they control the media.
We banned content claiming Zionists run the world or control the media.
Make that make sense. But on the one hand, I guess there's some logic to this. Why does Israel not endorse freedom of speech in the United States, other than their own preservation? Well, it's because very clearly in the Old Testament, freedom of speech was not allowed. There were death penalty laws against anybody who would preach a message other than the one that endorses the God of Israel. So if you preached about other gods, you were put to death. But I guess that brings me to another point. I really appreciate Pope Leo speaking up for freedom of speech and freedom of conscience. I truly commend him for that. But I'm honestly baffled by how this makes sense coming from the Pope. For over 1,000 years, the Catholic Church did not endorse freedom of speech or freedom of conscience. At certain points in history, the Church taught that heretics should be coerced to return to orthodoxy or threatened with the death penalty, and some of them were put to death. At other periods, the Magisterium suppressed free speech very clearly with the Inquisition and also with the Index of Forbidden Books. More recently, with the Second Vatican Council, the exact opposite was emphasized. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of conscience. And I praise that. I love that. I cherish that. But for the life of me, I don't understand how to make those two things make sense. And maybe there's a way to harmonize it, but I'm really struggling with how to make sense of that. And when people see that tension, it causes them to struggle about the reliability of the Magisterium. If it tells us in one age that freedom of speech is wrong and heretics can be put to death for not returning to orthodoxy, and in another age it says religion can never be used for violence, and you have freedom of worship, freedom of religion, freedom of conscience, freedom of expression, how are we supposed to trust the Magisterium? And it really looks like whatever the zeitgeist is at the time, that's what the Church emphasizes. So if it is common to suppress other religious communities, the Church emphasizes that. If it's common to emphasize freedom of religion, freedom of expression, the Church then emphasizes that. The sad reality is freedom of speech and freedom of religion as we know it today was more born out as a reaction to Catholicism and Protestantism in the West, where you had numerous wars of religion, you had suppression of speech, you had suppression of religion. Again, there was the Index of Forbidden Books that only in the last few decades fell out of use, but is still actually morally binding in the Church. And in the past, I have to unfortunately confess, I downplayed some of this, just because often in popular apologetic circles, we hear this stuff downplayed. The Crusades, the Inquisition, we hear it dismissed as overblown. Having looked through the primary sources in detail, in depth, way beyond anything that you'll see in the apologetics level, I've seen some things that are very troubling and very concerning. And yeah, sure, maybe some statements here and there are overblown or misstated. That may be true, but regardless, there are a lot of things that cannot be downplayed here, and some of those we've covered already on this channel. And unfortunately, I can't just sweep it under the rug as abuses, because often these things had the endorsement of the Magisterium, of the teaching authority of the Church. But now the Magisterium teaches something else, and I'm grateful for that. In fact, I have to say it's because of Pope Francis and because of Pope Leo challenging me on the question, emphasizing freedom of speech, freedom of religion. Their challenges in this area has challenged me personally to rethink through some of my own theological views and further appreciate what they're saying. So I really appreciate what Pope Leo is saying, what Pope Francis is saying about freedom of religion, freedom of expression. They've really convicted me about some of my own theology that appeared to be more in line with what the popes were saying in the past, more than what the popes are saying in the present. And I say that as somebody who's really appreciative of tradition and is very weary of new things and innovative teachings. At the end of the day, though, I have to really say, I appreciate what is being said in the post-conciliar period more than what I heard in the pre-conciliar period, at least on this particular point. And what I'm saying is nothing more than what the popes are already saying. Pope Benedict XVI himself is the very one who tells us, in the very context where he gives us the hermeneutic of continuity, he tells us, yeah, there's rupture here between what the Magisterium used to say and what the Magisterium is saying now on this particular point. So I'm not coming out with anything new on my own. This is something that popes themselves have recently said. And that's totally legitimate for the popes to say, but my only only thing is, that's going to cause a lot of people to wonder, well, how am I supposed to trust the magisterium if it tells me one thing one day and then something else another day, especially when it appears to coincide with whatever the zeitgeist is? Now, I'm not saying I have an answer or a solution here. I've looked for years, but I honestly cannot find one that is satisfactory in nature. Maybe it's out there. But what I think needs to happen is the magisterium itself needs to offer an explanation. The magisterium itself needs to assert why it is reliable in light of these difficulties. I think that would be really helpful and very productive instead of maybe focusing on some of the other things that the magisterium appears to be really preoccupied with. Well, those are my brief thoughts on the matter. I hope you enjoyed them and found them helpful and productive. If you did, please let me hear from you in the comment section. Make sure to hit the like button and also the subscribe button. By the way, if you want to check out my courses on the magisterium where I go over them in detail, I go over what the magisterium is, how it works, how to read magisterial documents. These are university level lectures that I've offered on these subjects. Go and check them out at rtcourses.com and check out the magisterial studies bundle specifically. Hit the subscribe button, hit the like button. God bless.